Welcome to episode 11 of All the Small Takes, where we have some big news this week, John and Cooper.
Huge news.
Alexi Lalas acknowledged us on Twitter.
So great. It was so exciting. I was in the middle of my one of my classes. It's a moment I'll remember for the rest of my life, you know, sitting there listening to the lecture, getting a text from Jeff. It's a magical moment.
So we tweeted, John, who's our Twitter czar, tweeted at Alexi Lalas early last week for probably, what, the fourth or fifth time, and mentioned his album, which I think helped. He's got an album.
Yeah.
Which is surprisingly not terrible. It's actually very pleasant listening. But John tweeted at him, and he tweeted back at us, "What's the story?" was his exact words. And we probably took a little too long to figure out what we wanted to say back. And probably. The moment slipped from our grasp to get Alexi Lalas on the podcast.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of those moments, you know, like in middle school where you would ask your friends, like, what do I say back in this text to a girl that you have a crush on?
That was exactly what our text chain was like for like 20 minutes. We had like drafts and messages.
Oh, man.
And I think he forgot about us like 5 minutes after he sent that tweet. But in any case, Lexi, by chance you are listening, the invite is still open to come on the podcast.
We still love you.
We love you, Alexi Lalas. And for any of our loyal listeners out there who want to see the tweet, it is still there, hasn't been deleted, still on Twitter. Maybe if we get over 10 reviews, we'll send out some of the some screenshots of the text conversation for anyone who's interested. A little carrot out there for the loyal listeners.
I don't know how good that carrot is, but in any case, that was a nice natural plug for our social media, John.
Yeah.
So, well done. Follow us on Twitter at Small Takes, Instagram small_takes, Facebook and Gmail. The Gmail is allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. We've got a big episode this week. We're going to do some quick NBA discussion before doing the first ever All the Small Takes mock draft, NFL mock draft 1.0, because that's the thing to do is put 0.0 on your drafts, your mock drafts. But first, we want to do a couple other quick housekeeping items. So John's fiance, Caitlin, who is a Platinum Star listener, has been listening since the very beginning. She created a couple of aids for your All the Small Takes listening experience. There is a bingo card, because apparently we say the same things a lot.
Apparently. Yeah, you can find that on our Facebook page. It's in a post. It comes with a 21 plus consumption game along with it for all those who are interested. So you can, yeah, find both of those on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook, All the Small Takes into the search bar, or Small Takes at Small Takes should also get you there.
Yep. And I just want to be clear. The consumption game, you can play that if you're not 21 too. It's all about what you consume. We don't condone consuming the wrong beverage.
Yeah. Let's be very clear here. We're a law abiding podcast. We do not endorse breaking the laws of any jurisdiction ever, period.
And that was our lawyer, John. All right.
I'm not a lawyer. No legal advice. No legal advice.
Let's move into some real things. Like I said, we're going to do some quick NBA talk. The panic button has subsided a little bit on my Celtics, and for the Cavs, I would say as well. Cooper, would you agree?
Yeah. I'll bring up the Cavs for the waste of data, but yeah, my hand is freely away from the panic button.
As is mine. But we're going to talk some different NBA series, NBA playoff series. We'll start out with the Steve Kerr injury, which has taken him out of the playoffs for the foreseeable future pretty suddenly. What impact do you guys think this has, if any, on the Warriors? Because obviously last year when he was out, they really had no issue.
Well, so, last year when they were out, they also had when he was out, they also had Luke Walton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he's down the coastline in LA, so maybe something to take into account. But I've heard some people say that Steve Kerr is just a system coach. You know, plug in anybody there, and the team will succeed. But I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of agnostic as far as the impact coaches have in the NBA.
Yeah. So. I actually think coaches matter, especially in the playoffs. Maybe I think lots of people are kind of pointing to a couple of arguments here, and John kind of summarized one of them, that coaches don't matter in the NBA. And that secondly, who cares? The Warriors performed, you know, crazily well with Walton last year instead of Kerr. The playoffs are different. There are lots of times when I think plays need to be called, certain strategies need to be implemented. I think playoff basketball is just it's a higher level. I don't know. I'm not like really sure how this is going to play out. I think the Warriors are definitely the best team in the league in terms of personnel. And it's not like Mike Brown's really a bad coach. He's been there before. He took the Cavs team to the finals. Granted, he got swept. But, I mean, it should be said that that was a team of LeBron and a bunch of nobodies. So it's not like he's an inexperienced coach. I don't know.
There's a fascinating subplot here of the potential Mike Brown, if Steve Kerr is in fact out for the rest of the postseason, the Mike Brown led Warriors against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals would be storylines galore.
Mm-hmm. Be pretty sweet. Well, plus, yeah. I mean, we would have to consider, like, if the Warriors go on to win an NBA title, do the Warriors then, like, think about why Steve Kerr is getting paid $5 million a season to coach a team that's just going to win regardless?
I think if the Warriors go on to win a title anyway, I think it's disastrous for the coaching profession in the NBA. I mean, like, I'm kind of, you know, on the edge of, you know, do coaches really matter? Because there are coaches like, I think, like Popovich and maybe like Eric Spoelstra, who I think do have an impact on their team. But they're just like, there are franchises that fire an NBA coach like halfway through a season or like, you know, a couple of weeks in just because they want to change the pace.
And then win an NBA championship.
And then win an NBA championship, you know.
Example Cavs.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. If I feel like Steve Kerr had to be like certainly the system he installed was important. And certainly the lessons he's taught to his players about how to run his system are important. But there should be an element of, you know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Kevin Durant when he's healthy, and all the other guys in the Warriors are accomplished basketball players who should be able to, you know, understand the situations they're in and execute to a relatively high level. I wouldn't be scared if I was a Warriors fan.
So we'll have to see how that plays out, but we'll move on to another storyline from this first round. Yesterday, after the Thunder lost game 4 of their series against the Rockets, there was an interesting exchange between Russell Westbrook and kind of Steven Adams. The question was directed at Steven Adams by a reporter, basically asking Steven Adams why the team does so poorly when Russ is not on the floor. And Russ kind of put this reporter in a body bag. And in my opinion, kind of rightfully so. I think it was a good question, but I don't think players are ever entitled to answer questions from the media. I'm not of that camp. But Cooper, I know you, but also John, I want to hear your thoughts too, have a slightly different opinion on this.
Yeah, so after listening to pretty much, I think, every single commentator that ESPN has to throw at me today on this topic, I've come to a couple of realizations. First, I think it's dumb, you know, to hear opinions of the media on whether or not, you know, a question is legitimate. Of course they're going to side with the reporter, and pretty much all of them have, because that's their profession. So they want to be able to ask all the questions that they get to ask. And secondly, I think that this is like, we are responsible for turning Russ into this, like, sort of the monster that we saw at the podium yesterday. Because for the past couple of years, that's all we've done with Russ, is told him that he's not a good teammate to play with. And so I think his response makes sense. I think he's trying to show that he is a caring teammate who wants to be there for his guys. Of course he's going to step up and say that. I mean, what else do you want him to do? I don't know. I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, we've seen like a whole host of, you know, post-game press conference issues, or like, you know, reactions, whether it be like Steph Curry and his daughter wandering around everywhere, or, you know, Cam Newton and crying and maybe not even showing up to the Super Bowl post-game press conference. And it's like, you know, I watched the national championship game press conferences for college basketball last year when Villanova won, and I watched them again this year when UNC won. I don't understand what's to be gained by having people sit up on a dais and let reporters, you know, pepper them with questions about, oh, you know, hey, you missed a free throw in this situation. How did that make your team feel? Or, hey, we noticed there was a momentum swing in this, you know, when they came out and scored 15 points. Did you guys just feel like you were done at that point? It's like, you know, there have been times when I've finished like a pickup game or a game of soccer, a game of basketball, where I had no desire to talk to anyone on the other team afterwards. because I was ticked off about stuff that had gone on in the game. I don't know why on earth we think it's, you know, some sacred duty to go out and speak to sports reporters about it. I mean, this is one thing if it's the president of the United States and he's, you know, just launched a nuke or something, but they're playing a basketball game.
Cooper, go ahead.
Yeah, so I totally agree. I think the question is, I even thought the question was a little illegitimate. It was kind of a, it was a question directed at Steven Adams asking him why the team was performing poorly when Russ is off the court, which to me is just like a no-brainer. It's almost like, I don't know, it'd be like asking why a peanut butter and jelly sandwich without peanut butter isn't good. Like, just, it's not necessary. Like, we know that the Thunder are an awful team with the league's best player. Of course, they're not going to be good off the court. Like, I was looking at some stats today, and everyone throws out this stat when defending the question, oh, the Thunder are, you know, minus 40 when Russ is sitting on the bench. Well, the Cavs were minus 21 against the Warriors in a series last year that they won. I just don't think the question, what did you expect Steven Adams or Russ to say in that scenario? He was probing for a response, and granted, he got one. Russ gave him one.
But no, okay, so my rebuttal to that would be that isn't it fair? So the numbers tell one thing. To get Steven Adams' thoughts on that, I think is interesting and valuable to me as a fan. What I didn't agree with was the way the reporter continued to press it and press it. And he really overstepped his bounds because, as I said at the beginning, I don't think players are ever obligated to respond to a question that a reporter asked. I don't think a reporter should ever do what that reporter did last night. But to John's point, there are certainly cases when the questions that reporters ask are pointless. And my favorite is when reporters start a question, which not even being a question, they say, talk about the fourth quarter or talk about that last drive. If that's just the laziest, most like ineffective and like unuseful question you could possibly ask. And again, not even a question, it's a statement. So, yeah. But I think there are, and I think this was at least before the reporter went kind of overstepped that line, this was an example of a time when that was a question that I would have been interested to hear Steven Adams' response to. And I have no issue with Russ jumping in the way he did either. I think you can be on both sides of that fence.
I mean, I'd prefer if we, you know, didn't, you know, chain him down to chairs in front of, you know, a host of TV cameras. Like, I love reading good sports journalism. I don't have anything against sports reporters and sports writers and stuff like that. It's just like, I think the concept of the necessity of a post game press conference and like, you know, oh, they've got to answer all these questions. And it's like, you know, most of these reporters know these guys or have some sort of connection that they could get these questions answered in a different way if they really wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say I was far more interested to hear LeBron's response to what he thought of the Kendrick album versus whatever some fabricated response Steven Adams would have given to this question.
Well, I disagree, but I think we will move on now from NBA talk. Those were the kind of the two big storylines we wanted to hit, and we want to save time for our NFL mock draft, the first ever NFL mock draft 1.0.
Can we call it like a 1.2? Have you ever heard of a draft going to like a 1.10 or something like that?
No, because they always go 2.0. They don't even have.
So I want to call this like, I don't know, the 1.11 or just something.
Yeah, we'll be the 1.11 since this is our 11th podcast. That's fitting. Yeah. As I said, we have each picked a team.
Teams,
multiple teams. And we're just going to run through. We don't know what any of the other hosts of this podcast plan to do with their picks. And we kind of picked teams in a draft format. We had a little bit of a meta draft. So the first pick is Cooper with the Browns.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to pick with the Browns. I think I like the idea of having two picks with one team. And there's no way this happens on Thursday or whatever day the draft happens because I'm not watching it. But whatever. I am not going to pick Myles Garrett. I'm not going to pick Mitch Trubisky. I have doubts and concerns about both of them. So instead, I spent all of today shopping around my pick. And I found a buyer. So I'm going to give my pick to Jeff, who is the front office executive of the Titans and the 49ers and the Chargers and the Bills, but I'm trading specifically to the Titans version of Jeff.
To Titans Jeff.
It's my favorite Jeff. Jeff, Cooper, I'm giving you my pick, the number 5 pick.
Sounds good.
as well as a player to be named, a pick to be named later.
Okay, cool.
So I'm now in the number one spot, and I am going to make the very bold, surprising pick of Myles Garrett at number one. The Titans last year did a little bit of research for this. We're second in run defense, but 30th in pass defense, and he helps them on both fronts. And they also are in an extremely winnable division, and were in the mix in that division last year for a good part of the season. And I will confess to not be a huge like NFL combine, NFL draft guy. In fact, I probably won't even watch on Thursday. But I think Myles Garrett has the potential to be like an Ndamukong Suh, J.J. Watt type disruptive defender who can quite literally transform a defense. I haven't, admittedly, haven't followed or read much about him besides what the prevailing opinion seems to be, but he's a stud very clearly, and I think he's a piece the Texans need.
He could probably bench you like 30 times.
Oh, he could.
Did you say a piece the Texans need?
Did I say the Texans? I said the Titans. The Texans are the other team in that division that's very mediocre. I think, again, division's wide open. So I also have the number two pick. Funny how that worked out. And that was the 49ers pick. And that also, I was shopping around earlier today. Our group chat today was basically the draft room, trades and offers and players flying everywhere. It was chaos.
It was.
But in the midst of that chaos, I offered the 49ers second overall pick, and Cooper gave me a nice little offer. So I swapped the pick to the Browns and to Cooper.
Yeah, and it was a pretty good deal for me because all I really had to give away was my second-round pick for this year and my future first-round pick from next year. And so, yeah, maybe that'll affect our, you know, mock draft 1. Or 2.11.
2.11.
Okay. Anyways,
1-1-1.
Okay. Cool. So I'm going to take Deshaun Watson for the Browns. I don't think that's a very surprising pick if you've listened to the podcast in the past. Maybe Mitch Trubisky turns out to be a great quarterback, and hopefully he does. I'm not wishing him, you know, bad luck or anything like that. But Deshaun Watson is a quarterback who threw for over 800 yards against the best defensive college football has to offer. Is one of the most successful college football quarterbacks in recent memory. Maybe whatever his technique is lacking, or for whatever reason, Mel Kiper doesn't like his hairdo. I think Deshaun Watson
coming from Mal.
I know.
Pretty darn.
I know. Anyways, I like Deshaun Watson. I think he's a winner. I think he's exactly what the Browns need because he's a little bit different than the previous quarterbacks that the Browns have drafted. And I do think the quarterback's such a value position. So if you see the guy out there, you do it to get him. Watson's my guy. So that's number two.
All right. John with the Bears at number three.
Yeah, Bears at number three. And I tried pretty desperately to get that number one overall pick from Cooper. Pretty much the soul of the Bears, their starting quarterback, their wide receiver, and their running back. And nothing was coming. Nothing was doing. So I'm sitting at number three. And I think as a general practice, taking a quarterback in the top with the top pick when your team is not just a quarterback away is a terrible, terrible decision. Leads to terrible things, as the Browns have shown us. But I think since Cooper did not take my pick, that actually the Bears are pretty well situated. They need a little bit of fixing up on defense, but they might just be one playmaker away, and that playmaker is Deshaun Kizer, the University of Notre Dame. So Kizer's a bit of a project, and the Bears are paying a lot of money to Mike Glennon right now, so maybe Kizer doesn't start right away, but I think, you know, the Bears pick him up. He's spent some time in the Bend. There's a lot of rabid Notre Dame fans over there. And, you know, on the weekends, he can come over and visit Brian Kelly, which
would be great. He has a really good relationship.
Great relationship with him. Kizer, the future Chicago Bears Hall of Famer. And, gosh, yeah.
Can I just say that Cooper and I predicted this 110%? Because when we did our meta draft earlier today, you were like, immediately, I want the Bears. And I didn't really put it together until Cooper and I were talking before we came on air, and Cooper was like, you know why he wants the Bears? Because he wants to take Deshaun Kizer, make him the quarterback of the Bears.
Well, you know, to be perfectly honest, I was not originally going to take Deshaun Kizer. I was going to take – I really wanted Myles Garrett for the Bears because I thought that would make their team amazing and, you know, good old Bears defense. But when Cooper spited me despite my overwhelming offer, I decided something had to be done. Deshaun had to come off the board early. So – With any luck, all the small takes curse will prove true, and DeShone Kizer will not be stuck with the Chicago Bears. He'll go to go to some team that wants to develop a quarterback for a contender, like, I don't know, Pittsburgh.
I see what you're doing. All right, you have the number four pick as well.
I have the number four pick as well. I have the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Soon to become the London Jaguars.
I think they're actually probably going to stay in Jacksonville. Fulham is pretty busy in London right now. I don't think their owner's quite ready to switch them over to London. But the Jaguars have a couple different holes. They could use a playmaker to back up Blake Bortles in offense. They could use some defensive guys. They could use another pass defender. But I think the biggest thing they need right now is they need some explosiveness. They need to sell some tickets, and they need to get that offense going. Their defense was not bad last year. I think it's in the top 10 in most of their statistics, but their offense was not. And I have faith in Blake Bortles. I don't think he's an elite quarterback necessarily, but I do think he deserves to be an NFL starting quarterback. He just needs someone to help him out. So the Jaguars are going to draft Leonard Fournette.
And I hate you so much.
Line him up in the backfield, and hopefully they'll start a nice little run there.
I like how you mentioned that Blake Bortles, like, I don't think he's an elite quarterback, as if that's like a debated question.
I think the question is whether, like, people are really down on Blake Bortles, and I really don't think he's that bad. I think he's been in like a not awesome personnel situation in Jacksonville. I think they've invested a lot in their defense and not as much in their offense.
I don't know.
If they hold on to him, he's going to be fine.
I hope so.
He's a 10-year starter, I think. And, you know, maybe he's more than that, but I mean, I don't think he's less than that.
All right, Cooper, you seem pretty disdained when John snatched Leonard Fournette there.
Yeah.
You do have the next pick from me. I swapped the Titans number five with you.
You know what? I don't even want it anymore. I'm just going to trade it away. It's ridiculous.
Hey, this is Bill Belichick from the New England Patriots. We hear you're interested in number
five.
Patriots whatever. Are not in the top 12.
No, I'm not messing with Bill
Belichick. Are you interested in Jimmy Garoppolo?
No, the Browns have learned their lesson with the Patriots before. Not messing with that anymore. Gosh, dang it. Okay, so the Browns have actually a pretty decent offensive line. They went out and spent a lot of money on Zeitler, making him, I'm pretty sure, the highest paid offensive guard in football, and actually snatched him from my hometown Bengals, which kind of stinks, but whatever, good for the Browns. They now have a winning quarterback. So I really need to give them another playmaker on offense to go with it, which is why Leonard Fournette kind of seemed to, you know, fit perfectly. And so what I'm going to actually do is I'll just snipe Christian McCaffrey here, and I'll give him to the Browns. I think that's a little high. Actually, I think that's incredibly high. I think there's a chance that's Christian McCaffrey doesn't even go in the first round. But whatever, we're just going to go with it. I think he has the chance to be an incredibly good player. You can line him up pretty much anywhere on the field, in the backfield, or, you know, as a wide receiver, even a slot, or, you know, you're out on the boundaries. And so I like his ability to do lots of things for me offensively, especially with Hugh Jackson, who we have seen in the past is a very creative offensive mind. So I think he would find ways to use McCaffrey.
Would you almost call him like a Danny Woodhead type?
I think he's a little bit more hyped than Danny Woodhead coming out of college.
Maybe a little bit. Danny Woodhead went to like a D2 school in Nebraska.
Yeah, I think a little bit more hyped.
All right. John, you're up with the in our meta draft. You got the short end of the stick and ended up with the New York Jets pick here at number six.
Yeah. So the Jets are an interesting interesting conundrum. They play the Patriots twice a year, and they're probably never going to win the division. And they actually have a lot of problems everywhere. Where the Jags like had a bit of an issue on offense, the 20s in every statistic in the NFL. So it's like, you know, do we go with this? Do we go with that? Their passing attack was ranked 27th this past year. And they have chosen not to invest in a quarterback. They've chosen to continue paying the guy they've got. So maybe they want a quarterback to develop behind him. I don't think so, because I think the idea of developing a guy for the Jets is silly, because they're not a team that's ready to win. They're not just a quarterback away. They need to get some position players in there. They need to get some offense in particular. And there is one player besides Leonard Fournette who I think is truly explosive in this draft. And while he does have a history of some scary neck injuries, I think he's definitely the best player, position player besides Fournette. That's Mike Williams.
All right.
Yeah.
So I was interested in Mike Williams for a later pick. And I was also interested in Christian McCaffrey for a later pick. But that's what it's like here in the mock draft world. We adjust on the fly. And so my next pick, I was never going to take one of them here with the Chargers. I was going defense, and the Chargers defense is actually pretty solid. Their front seven in particular with Joey Bosa, Cooper's favorite school, has potential to be really, really good. But their secondary is a huge hole. And I really like Marshawn Lattimore out of The Ohio State University.
Another Buckeye.
Yeah. He's a pretty stout cornerback, and that's a pretty big need for the Chargers, and really a need if you want to compete in the NFL today at all. So I like Lattimore there. Cooper, I thought you'd find that pleasing.
Yeah, well, now the Chargers are going to have a Buckeye, every single defensive position group, which I think will be cool. So they'll probably make their defense much better than it was.
Yeah, they'll have fun playing in a soccer stadium in Los Angeles.
That's true.
Who's next? Cooper.
Got
next two picks.
So I had to manipulate a couple things because, John screwed me over. And so initially I was hoping McCaffrey would fall to the Panthers at 8th because I thought he would be perfect for that offense and Cam Newton. Instead, I guess I'll switch it up here and go defense. The Panthers traded away Josh Norman. It definitely affected them. Their defense was not nearly as good. And so to give them a cornerback, I'll give them Garian Conley, also out of Ohio State.
It's almost like you have a favoritism for Ohio State or something.
I do.
That's bizarre.
I do. But Garian Conley has been up in many different mock drafts. It's not like, me drafting DeShone Kizer in the top 3 or something like that. Now, that would be absurd.
Was Garian Conley ever ranked the number one overall player in the
in
draft?
In what world was DeShone Kizer the number one all overall ranked player?
Do you remember that first mock draft after the Texas game?
The 1.0.
1.0. That was the real 1.0.
The true 1.0.
The true 1.0. Okay. The genesis of all mock drafts.
Yeah. Can we just talk about for a second how radically different it's going to be for if Marshawn Lattimore goes to the Chargers, for the Ohio State players on the Chargers going from Ohio Stadium into the soccer stadium as the Chargers are playing in next year? It's going to be absurd.
I don't know if it'll be a huge impact.
Man, they're getting paid. So they're going
to
be.
Yeah, they're getting paid. Going from a collegiate athlete to being a professional athlete, I think has its benefits.
A little bit more. They'll be able to spend more.
All right, let's move this along a little bit. Cooper, who do you like with the Bengals, your Bengals at number 9?
Yeah, so I think the Bengals need defense. They need help, especially in their front seven. The Bengals have Geno Atkins, and Geno Atkins is a stud and will always be a stud. They have Carlos Dunlap, who didn't have that great of a season, did have lots of pass breakups and deflections at the line, which is kind of like an under-the-radar statistic. And Michael Johnson, who they got back from the Bucks after kind of letting him go in free agency, is showing his age. And so I'm going to stick on the defensive line. I don't think it ever hurts to pick an edge rusher, in the NFL, especially in this era's NFL. And so I'm just going to take who I think is the best defensive lineman remaining. And really, we've only taken one. So I'll take Jonathan Allen.
I was hoping we were going to make it through this draft without any Alabama players.
Sorry.
Quickly with the 10th, I have the Bills here, in division rival to my Patriots. And I really wanted McCaffrey here because they just lost their running back to the Patriots. But so again, here, deciding on the fly, I like O.J. Howard out of Alabama. We went from having zero Alabama players in the draft to now having a couple back-to-back. But if you put him – a really dynamic tight end alongside Sammy Watkins and with a guy like Tyrod Taylor, who I'm not particularly down on. A lot of people are, but I think he's a competent NFL quarterback, and he's got some good weapons around him, and O.J. Howard would just be another one to add to that. So sorry for upsetting the Alabama.
I mean, quick correction. We all know that Cardale Jones is going to be throwing to O.J. Howard next season. That happens.
He'll be slotted in like week 4. He'll lead them to the playoffs, and then he'll trade him in the offseason
And then he'll get cut from the NFL because they don't like his throwing motion or whatever, and he'll end up playing baseball.
He ain't come here to
play school.
Film study. Play school, yeah. No.
Film study.
We come
not
here
to go to the NFL to do that. You're right.
All right. John, you've got the Saints.
I got the Saints, my hometown team over in NOLA. So the Saints are also a team with a lot of areas they could improve. I mean, they have Drew Brees, and Drew Brees is on the tail end of his career here. He's got a couple more years to go where he's still a top-level quarterback. So it might make sense for the Saints to draft a quarterback to kind of develop alongside him. But I don't think it makes sense to take him at 11. And I do think that they have a lot of problems with their defense that they need to start addressing as they get ready to switch over to the post-Drew Brees era. In this draft, who is versatile, who you can plug in at a couple different positions, and who lets you really control, help give you more control over your opponent's run game. And this is the best linebacker in the draft, Hassan Reddick, a former walk-on at Temple University, who has really blossomed into a pretty versatile talent. And I think he'll be playing alongside of Manti Te'o in the Saints linebacking core. Be a nice solid connection there. Go Irish. Yeah.
Again, that was like the double homer whammy right there from John. You had the Philly connection and you had the Notre Dame plug. So that's like four spaces in the bingo box probably. All right, Cooper, we'll wrap up with you and the Browns.
Yeah, I had the Browns with my third pick in the top 12, which I think is miraculous and shows how brilliant I am as an executive. So a couple options here. I need to go defense. I went offense with my first two. And I'm kind of flipping through two options, Malik Hooker and Jabril Peppers. I think both are incredibly explosive players. Maybe both of them kind of a little bit of a risk because we don't really know if they can perform consistently at the next level. But I think many people agree that they both have the potential to be insanely good. But in the state of Ohio, there's no way I'm picking someone from Michigan. And so we're going to go with Malik Hooker.
Out of?
Ohio State.
There it is.
Wow.
Well, folks, there you have it. Yeah. The first annual Small Takes Mock Draft 1.11. We're going to run it back really quickly because I've kind of forgotten who I picked early on. So that means you guys probably have to. So we had the Browns at number one, who traded their pick to the Titans, who took Myles Garrett. Number two, the 49ers, who traded their pick to the Browns and took Deshaun Watson. Then from there on out, we did not have any other trades. We had the Bears with hometown boy, Deshaun Kizer at number three, the Jags, Leonard Fournette at four, the Titans, nope, sorry, the Browns with Christian McCaffrey at number five, Jets with Mike Williams at six, Chargers, Marshawn Lattimore at seven, Panthers, Garyon Conley at eight, Bengals, Jonathan Allen at nine, the Bills, OJ Howard at 10, the Saints, Hassan Reddick at 11, and the Browns rounding it out with Malik Hooker from the Ohio State at number 12.
I think if Deshaun Kizer goes in the top five, we should just all agree that Notre Dame is probably going to win the national championship next year.
Like, it's just a sign.
Yeah, I think it, yeah.
Notre Dame national championship and Josh Adams Heisman.
Yeah, they're both going to happen if Deshaun goes in the top five.
All right, so we're going to wrap up with a couple of very quick segments this week since we were a little long on the topics, and we're going to do a segment we have only done once before, but we got some really great listener mail this week from a Rick and a Cynthia, who were very kind, very complimentary most of the time, and took time to write very lengthy emails to us. So we appreciate you guys, Rick and Cynthia, wherever you are. We hope you're listening. We're going to give some highlights from their email. So they said, and these were about episodes 8 and 9, so we're going back a couple episodes, but they said baseball might be more exciting if the players looked more like athletes.
It doesn't seem to favor Pablo Sandoval.
No, it does not.
Or Bartolo Colon.
See, Bartolo's the exception, though. Bartolo's still out there doing it literally shaped like an orange.
Yeah, I was going to say a pumpkin. But pumpkin. That works too.
But I don't necessarily disagree either. Let's see what else we got here. How many of you guys were alive in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s? John, this one feels like it's very pointedly directed at you.
Yeah, I feel kind of targeted by this one, you know. I
Triggered.
mean, due to my odes to the old days of baseball. Like, and I'll just say, you didn't have to be alive then to appreciate history. I'm a student of history, right? There's something beautiful about it, right?
You're an old soul. Okay, the last one from this email that I thought was really funny. If Josh Adams wins the Heisman, Maddie, who is my fiance, should host. And I love this idea, and I think we should run with it and make a little wager that if Josh Adams does win the Heisman, all of our significant others get to host the podcast for a week.
Yes, sure. I Caitlin would love that. Caitlin would love that.
Sure, I guess. I mean, like, I'm 100% down. I just don't want to be in the doghouse because I committed someone to something that specific someone doesn't really want to do. So, whatever. I mean, it was said on our podcast. It's probably cursed. It's never going to happen. So
probably.
I don't think we have to worry about.
I think our listeners might appreciate the break from us, though. Like, yeah. It might not be the worst thing for our brand.
Wait, we have one of those?
Yeah, check us out on Twitter.
And Instagram.
Also Instagram and Facebook.
Very natural plug for the social media. All right, there's a second email. This one was about episode 9. We'll call out a couple things here quickly. The Cavs are a gym crack? Gym crack? What word is that?
It's pronounced gym crack. Give me a second here.
This is the latest installment of John Defines.
Via Google search.
It's pronounced gym crack. Yes. Yes, via our pals at Google. Not sponsors yet, but maybe in the future. It can be used as an adjective or a noun. It can mean flimsy or poorly made, but deceptively attractive, or a cheap and showy ornament.
And this is in reference to the Cavs.
To the Cavs.
Yeah, I see it. I see it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where it's like, I have no idea what you were saying, so I'm just going to like nod my head and be like, yeah, go for it.
Well, it's like, you know, like the veneer of the Cavs, it's really, you know.
It's probably how Richard Sherman's really opponents just where to feel explode. When he's taunting them.
What? All right, moving on.
I don't think
that's
that
a
works
great
at
segment.
All.
I'm also plugging that
I don't
there.
Think you understood the definition.
Sorry, you need to go up and look at like Richard Sherman's list of taunts that he gives like the wide receivers he's facing. He's known for being this very intelligent guy and using words that no one else knows. And that's kind of how I feel like one of his opponents.
Jim crack does kind of feel like dirty when you say it. It doesn't feel like a clean word.
No,
this is a family podcast.
Yeah,
right?
it is a clean word. It just doesn't feel that way. All right, last point that I thought I really liked from this email is there was an update as they're listening. The baby's broken into tears. Too much NBA talk. Probably isn't the first time someone's broken into tears listening to our podcast. Maybe it won't be the last.
Well, because of the two, you know, 84 game seasons or whatever we calculated that they play. We got a while to go. It's a long season.
Uh-huh.
It's a long one. It's a long one. So, you know, the little babes might need to buckle in for the long.
And just remember that nothing is as bad as baseball. All of July and August, I'm going to be pleading that we talk about college football and the NFL.
Yeah, the real tears will come then.
Exactly.
The real tears will come then. We'll move to our last segment, the segment that we end every episode with, the waste of data. And Cooper, why don't you kick us off this week?
All right. So my waste of data this week, something I'm pretty fired up about. Henry Abbott posted an article on ESPN.com, which basically gave you a preview of a future ESPN The Mag article that he wrote. And he argued that LeBron is slowing down, not because of any statistics that he pointed to or anything like that, or play on the court, but just because of science and because he has to, because everyone else does eventually, I guess. And I'm not really sure if this logic makes a ton of sense, especially if you look at LeBron's play on the court and certain measurables. LeBron had arguably his best NBA season. Statistically, this season was third in effective field goal percentage. It was first in assists and first in rebounds. And his ability in this four-game series with the Pacers to sink game-winning or game-tying threes in the postseason in closing time might be a better indicator, I think, of his fatigue than just some silly argument that science is going to catch up to LeBron. And I'm just in general very sick of, I think, people throwing stats at me that are so twisted and convoluted that they're meaningless, or you're just using them to support your own argument. Because sure, LeBron might have played more minutes per game than anyone else in the league, but LeBron didn't play every game, and he wasn't first in the league in total minutes played because he's taking games off. And now he has a week-long break before the next round of the playoffs. And so I'm just, in general, kind of, this was like the peak of my frustration of everyone just kind of hopping on this Cavs imploding storyline that everyone's been doing for the past 3 months. Sure, it's a cool article that goes into the science of sports fatigue and all these things, but I think Abbott just kind of hopped on the wagon a little bit too late.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the idea of the God science catching up to LeBron either.
No comment.
I just think it's almost unnatural how he's stayed so healthy. All right, John, what's your wasted data?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of talk of refereeing in the NBA, and this week especially, there's been controversy over, you know, how many calls were made in the Grizzlies Spurs series, and Grizzlies coach complained about it, and then all of a sudden his team got more calls, and a lot of that, this upset a lot of the sort of NBA establishment, some of the old guard, and even some current NBA faces. But I think the whole, like, there seems to be this myopia regarding refereeing in American professional sports, where there is, like, everyone loves to complain about, like, how bad the referees are, but no one is actually suggesting any long-term solutions. I think the easy solution is easier, and you make refereeing a full-time job. These leagues are making tons and tons of money. If they want to increase the quality of the games and make the games better, then just pay the guys who are slowing the games down better, and then make it easier for them to officiate the games. I think there are so many rules about contact in the NBA. I think if the NBA were to switch to sort of an on or off switch kind of fouling system, where did you make a dangerous play on the ball? Yes, that's a foul. Did you not? Did you just like bump into him a little bit? No. Okay, it's not a foul. And they certainly ought to move to a system where it's preferred to let them play on, as opposed to, gosh, calling a foul against a defender who's defending a guy outside the three-point line who jumps up and takes a shot he has no chance of making just so he can draw. It's obnoxious. It gets me angry.
Dwayne Wade patented.
No, hold on.
Yes.
James Harden is a magician.
Yeah, but Dwayne Wade
literally is like somehow just
first.
But tricks basketball players
into sticking their arms into his like body and then putting up a three and then shooting. He's a magician.
Yeah, I think the classic image in my head though is Dwayne Wade luring some poor unsuspecting defender out beyond the 3-point line.
Usually for the Boston Celtics, yeah.
It's bad, and we ought to not be encouraging it. You know, yeah. Basketball has suffered because of it.
100% agree. All right, my wasted data, just to wrap up quickly, even in light of what we did here today with our mock draft, my wasted data is anyone who publishes a full 7-round mock draft and decides that is worthy putting on the internet. Because it's just bananas that you could even think, like, cause we just did 12 picks today, and there's no chance that we get half those right. To do 7 rounds... is just mind-boggling to me. I don't know who reads it. I'm certainly not one of them, but apparently there's an audience out there for it. Cooper?
Yeah, I am 1,000% guilty of going through the 7-round mock draft.
No, you're not.
I am.
You don't even know their names after we get to the 5th round.
I have no idea. But, I mean, I do think there's something to, like, you'll scroll through them really quickly and see who your team's drafting in the late rounds, and then, you know, it's cool to see, like, where your favorite college players are going to get drafted, if they're going to get drafted. And
that would be cool if it was in any way definitive or indicative of where they're going to be drafted, but it's not.
Half the guys doing it are like college kids writing for Bleacher Report who have no idea what's going on. We got to distinguish ourselves from the college kids. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're you know, pseudo professionals.
That's so generous.
No, we're not getting paid.
We're not getting paid, period.
Yeah. Well, you get what you pay for, right? To all of our loyal listeners.
If you're still with us, thank you. And that is our show for the week. Thank you guys seriously for listening. We hope you enjoyed this week. We hope you enjoy all of our shows. You can go back and listen to previous ones if you want. They're all available on our iTunes page. if you have comments or suggestions or questions or especially reviews, you can leave those on the iTunes page. You can also find us on any of those social media sites that we mentioned earlier. We really appreciate you all listening. This has been a lot of fun for us. Hopefully it's been fun for you too. And until next time.
Dope.